Welcome, everybody, to Inside Boxing Weekly on the Grilly True Sports Network. As always, I am your host, Mike Goodpaster. I want to welcome in my co-host, author. You can go to Amazon to get all three of his books. I especially like the Gotti Ward book. What was that called again, John? Intimate Warfare. We also had Blood on My Notebook and a few more rounds. So make sure you check out all of John Respondi's books on Amazon. How you doing, John?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks. Always a pleasure.
And we are going to get to talk about what I think is a great, going to be a very interesting fight. One of the fights of the year up there with Crawford and Spence. We get them both in the same week, basically. Of course, I'll have to wake my butt up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch it. You'll have to stay up till two. But I think you and Dove are usually just coming in from a night out of town at 2 a.m. anyways, right, John?
Oh, sure. I'm in bed by 10:15 every night. So I'm going to have to get up and watch it too tomorrow morning. So, yeah, same deal.
Now, it's the good thing about being older and going to bed early. You can get up at 5 o'clock the next morning, and it's no big deal. All right. I want to remind everybody, if you want to bet on this fight, go check out BetMGM. Check out the link to the description of the video down below. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Grueling Truth. So we've got Inoue versus Fulton. We're going to preview and predict that. Then we're going to finish the show up by remembering Alexis Arguello. And then later on this week, we will have a Crawford Spence preview. And we will recap the Inoue Fulton fight. But Inoue Fulton, John, Inoue is a guy who, outside of the one fight against Benito Donaire, hasn't really been tested a lot. He's moving up in weight again, up to 118, I believe it is, from 115. Is this a bridge too far? Because at some point, it's going to be too far, probably. And to me, Fulton is a guy, stylistically, who could give Inoue a lot of trouble.
Could be. That's why it's such a compelling fight. I mean, he started at 108 pounds, which, you know, he's moving up 14 pounds. So that's a big, big jump. I don't know. Every time I've watched Inoue, I thought that he really is damn good. And his punches are straight and everything, but I've only seen Fulton a couple of times. And when he really impressed me was with against Figueroa, and that's why I think the fight is tough for both of them. Is that if he fights like he did against Figueroa, then that gives Inoue more chances to clip him with a punch that, if he brings the power up, we're not sure. I kind of think he will, maybe not to the same destructive way that he has in the past, but he's a gritty Philadelphia. You know, those Philadelphia fighters, Mike, they're tough as nails. So I'm expecting him to try to be smart and outbox him. He's bigger, the bigger guy, keep him on the jab because he's really good at controlling distances. So in that respect, this is really going to be a big time challenge for the monster. And I think he knows it from what I read. He said all the right things. So it's going to be who can adapt and who can beat the other guy to the punch and who can take the other guy's punch. Fulton's only got 8 knockouts, but we don't really know. Anyways, was clipped by Donaire. Didn't seem to bother him. His face got messed up the first fight, but we'll see. If Inoue catches Fulton early and he hurts him, that could be it.
Yeah, and I think when we look at this fight, the betting odds right now, you know, they heavily favor Inoue. Right now, what I'm seeing is minus 370. Fulton's getting plus 275, almost a 3-1 fight. I think those odds are way too long in this fight. I think more like 7-5, maybe even 2-1. But almost 3-1 to me is way too much on this fight.
Absolutely agree. I put that in an article I wrote for the Grueling Truth. I don't get why they're – it's like Fulton's not getting any respect. And in a sense, he's not. Even the comments online that I've seen on social media, it's like, in a way, I'll blow right past them. I mean, maybe anything's possible, but Fulton is a tough, gritty dude and a really good boxer. So 3-1 is way too high. I put the same thing. I thought 2-1, 7-5 was closer. Inoue has to be the favorite for other reasons too. The fact that he's what he's done, the fact that he's fighting at home, which is unfortunately always a factor in some sports. So there's a lot of mountains for Fulton to climb to win this one, but he can do it.
Yeah, and when you look at it, to me, the big difference is that I think Fulton is a very good to excellent fighter. I think Inoue is a great fighter. So does the weight difference make that big of a difference? I mean, Stephen Fulton defended his WBC, WBO titles. He had a dominant performance against Daniel Roman. I think that was a year ago, 2022. And I mean, he's got to leave the United States. He's got to go to Japan to fight in front of a hostile crowd. We don't know how he deals with that either. But my biggest concern with Fulton is this. In a way, to me, is not just a clubber. I mean, he has some nuance to the way he fights. He has some defensive abilities. He goes to the body well. But my question with Fulton is this. When I look at the styles, I almost want to just bet Fulton and take the plus 275 or plus 300. But lack of power with Fulton worries me a little bit because, in a way, I think takes a decent shot. I know this guy's a few pounds heavier than anybody else he's fought. But I don't know if Fulton's got the power to keep in a way honest here.
Yeah, exactly. And eight knockouts isn't anything to write home about. And then the other thing is that I saw with Inoue is that when he fought Butler, he didn't exactly cut the ring off. He chased him around.
Yeah.
Right? He chased him around, but Butler really didn't want to engage. I think Fulton can engage and be effective. So that changes the factors a little bit, too. Inoue's going to have to cut the ring off better against Fulton if he wants to corner him and get some good work done, because he might be getting hit more than he's ever been hit, and he has to do some damage at some point. So, Fulton, his lack of power is a concern, but his toughness and his intelligence are definitely factors for him that he can utilize in there against a guy like Inoue, who's also intelligent. The other thing Mike did that's really impressive about Inoue is he throws really straight punches. He doesn't have any of these big looping shots, you know, like some guys. They're textbook shots. So Fulton's really got to be ready for that. And I'm sure he is. That's the thing that makes the fight really intriguing, too, is you got two smart guys, two really talented guys. And I agree, Inoue is probably a great fighter. Fulton is extremely good. So this is could go either way very easily.
Yeah, and I think the best bet on this fight, I think I've just found. And the best bet to me on this fight is to take Inoue plus 225 to win a decision. Because to me, I do think it's kind of a toss-up fight. I also realize with the fight being in Japan, you may get a little bit of home cooking there, just a little bit maybe, John. We've seen that. I've seen it a couple times in the 54 years I've watched boxing. So
only a couple?
You've got that also. And I think this, though, I mean, this puts it away on a whole new stratosphere if he was to knock out Fulton within five or six rounds.
Oh, for sure.
If he did that, John, I think you could make the case that he's the best fighter pound for pound in the world.
If he does that, and there are some people that think he's going to do it. That would be because I've been thinking decision too, and this would be my eyes if he does that. I would be surprised, but then I wouldn't be that shocked only because he does things that surprise me. He's done things in other fights that have surprised me. Now against this competition, though, that would really be kind of a wower if he did it. So I would be more than
it would surprise me if he did it within the first six rounds. I would not be surprised if he stopped him in the eighth, ninth, or tenth, something like that.
Well, that's what I was thinking when I was first thinking about this fight, that if he stops him, it's going to be later. But
where he wears him down, it gets to his body and takes a little bit out of him.
The question is, too, will he come out fast? Will he really try to go after Fulton right away, where we kind of wait and see what Fulton's going to do in situations? That's what he's probably thinking about right now. And again, the first round is going to probably the first three or four rounds are going to tell us a lot of what's going to happen later in the fight.
Yeah. And to me, if I had to compare this to a fight, I don't know, maybe a little Timothy Bradley, Manny Pacquiao, where you had the controlled boxer who didn't really have a huge punch. But I think all those fights were lost by Bradley because Pacquiao did just enough. So my question is this. For Fulton to win a decision, he's going to have to throw enough punches, which is going to put him in harm's way, because he's not going to be able to have a stinker here and get the decision, I don't think, in Japan.
No, I really think, and this is going to sound terribly cynical, I know you're going to be surprised, Mike, but I think that the aggressive approach of, in a way, just chasing, even if Fulton is effective at times, will be enough for the judges to give him the round, even if Fulton hits him with three or four punches, because they'll say he's being the aggressor, he's making the fight. And you can make that argument, but if you're making the fight and getting hit 10 times and you're landing one, you're not winning the round, in my opinion. But I think in Japan, it would be more he's the aggressor, he's fighting hard, he's pushing, he's doing all that, and that would be enough, and that could be enough for this he gets a close decision and everybody will be arguing about it later because Fulton might end up landing more punches. We've seen that. A guy ends up landing 50, 60 more punches and loses the decision according to the stats, which are always a little this way. But you see it with your naked eye and go, wait a minute. How could that be when the other guy outboxed him in pretty much every round? And usually that's only Canelo that happens in his fights where he gets outboxed and wins the round.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He doesn't win the round. He gets given the round.
He gets given the round, right. He gets it even no matter what. He just shows up and he gets the round. So I just hope it isn't like that. I always they have the same thing. I hope it isn't controversial. I hope it's clear cut. And that the only way that probably happens is if it's a knockout.
But, you know, if there's a handful of fights on any given weekend, and at least one fight, there's going to be a decision that is at least disputable. Maybe not a robbery, but at least disputable. We saw that this past weekend. But, once again, Inoue's average fight time is 5.75 rounds per fight. If he has to chase a bigger, younger, stronger Fulton, do you think that that could come into play? I mean, but I know Inoue's power carries leg because he stopped Butler in the 11th round. But I think this could be a different beast with a bigger, stronger guy who has really good boxing skills.
I mean, if he is stronger, I don't know. I saw the weigh-in pictures. Inoue looks cut. He looks ready. Fulton obviously does. He looks even more comfortable in a way at 122. It just depends on how his body can handle it. You know, these are little tiny jockeys, these guys. So we'll
don't
see.
Don't say that, John. That'll get you in trouble. I know that from like 5 years ago when it got me in trouble.
From the Jockey Union Association?
Or? Yes, I think it was the JUA.
Oh, my gosh.
They call it. Yeah.
Oh, so they're upset? What, are they actually?
No, it was all right because then I had Lafitte Pinkai on to talk horse racing like a month later.
Okay.
So everybody shut up.
Great. But they're small guys. So just and moving up like that sometimes. But even that happens with bigger guys sometimes. So there's no that. And again, that's what makes this fight compelling. You have to give in a way, too. He's going for the gold here. He's testing himself. And nowadays in boxing, Mike, we don't get that very much. So it's very refreshing. And the way Fulton is saying, look, I wanted this fight. I'll go there and fight him. That's also refreshing. So you got to give.
Well, let's face it. At 122, if you're not going to Japan to fight Inoue, you're not making any money.
Well, yeah, but a lot of guys didn't want to do it. So
I know.
And he never lost. And a lot of guys are very protective of their never losing nowadays. That's overrated too. So, you know, you got to give it to him. Fulton is the gritty Philly guy. That's what I've been saying. He's Philadelphia all the way. So, you know, you better not underestimate him. We're going to be in trouble in a way.
Yeah, I would say this. When I look at the fight, I know our own Chris Carlson wrote a preview on the fight. He picks Fulton to win the fight by a majority decision. I think the way this fight goes is I think Fulton will control the early rounds. I think he'll control the tempo of the fight. I think he'll keep Inoue a little off bay. I think Inoue around the fourth, fifth, sixth round is going to kind of catch on, get a little bit more comfortable. And I think he wins a close, maybe 115, 113 decision over Fulton.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what I'm thinking. And everyone will debate it. And a lot of people will say Fulton got robbed and because he'll be boxing effectively. And Inoue might land two punches and Fulton might land five. But Inoue's two might have more effectiveness in a sense than Fulton's five. So there'll be that debate about quality versus quantity and all that stuff. So I'm expecting that. The people that have been writing that Inoue is just going to blow out Fulton. I'm like, really, I have a hard time seeing it. But again, it could happen. So, or Fulton could box his ears off and win a decision. But Fulton to win a decision over Inoue in Japan is going to have to dominate. That's unfortunately the way that I think it is with the A fighter and the B fighter.
Yeah, I think Inoue in Japan is like Canelo. To beat Canelo, you have to win 9 out of 12 rounds.
Yeah, and then you only get, what, 7 judged for you?
You'll win 115, 113, 114, yes. 114, and 116, 112 is one guy will look like he may have actually watched the fight.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate that about boxing. I, you know, we always talk about you go back years. There were controversial decisions years ago. I'm sure there were. I don't remember them all, but not to this degree, Mike. Not to this degree.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go ahead. We're going to go back in time and talk the explosive thin man. Alexis Arguello was a 3-division world champion. He was inducted into Boxing Hall of Fame in 1992. This was one of my favorite boxers of all time, John, because number one, I think he's one of pound for pound, one of the greatest boxers that ever lived. And number two, probably one of the better people that boxing has ever seen.
Yeah, for sure. You know what pops into my mind right away is after he got beat by Aaron Pryor in fight one, he was on CBS, the CBS Sports Spectacular. I'm sure you remember that. And he's on the show, and he's only got half a mustache. And, or no, maybe he shaved off all his mustache. But they're like, well, what happened to your mustache? And he goes, well, I told my son if I lose this fight, I have to shave my mustache. And it was so humble and so amazing for a guy with all this ability and all this success to do that and be so supportive and complimentary of Aaron Pryor that he was incredible. He was fun to watch. You know, his fight with Boom Boom Mancini was a hell of a fight. Boom Boom really gave him.
Yeah, and the way he actually looked like he felt bad for Boom Boom and his dad after he beat him.
He did. Yeah, like, I'm sorry I had to do that in the 14th round, but I had to do it. Yeah, Aguayo. And then the other fight, and I know you'll probably remember because you're younger than me, but his comeback fight, he was fighting the ex-champion out in New York City, I think his name was. I can see him. Billy Costello. He was fighting Billy Costello, and he was losing every round, if you remember. The first three rounds.
Yeah, one punch is over, though.
Yes, and I was watching it, and I was going, oh, man, is he going to lose to Billy Costello? Bam! Yeah, you know, that's how I reacted. So yeah, he was a legitimate all time great.
Yeah, and if you look at the competition he faced, I mean, if you go down from Billy Costello, Aaron Pryor, Claude Noel, Villamar Fernandez, of course he fought Pryor twice, knocked out Kevin Rooney with one shot too in the second round. You remember the Hawaiian Andy Gannigan,
yes,
who was supposed to be the biggest puncher in the lightweight division? Bubba Buscemi, who was a really good amateur fighter. Elizondo, I think he beat Ray Mancini, of course, in what was a great fight. He beat Jim Watt, very good fighter. Mm-hmm. Jose Luis Ramirez. Yeah, Cornelius Boza Edwards.
Yeah.
I'm going to read these off in a row.
Bobby Chacon.
Rolando Navarrete. Yeah. Ruben Castillo. Bobby Chacon, Rafael Limon, or Bazooka Limon, Alfredo Escalera, which you had the bloody Battle of Bayonne, the first fight. The second fight was an outstanding fight, too, because Escalera is a guy also, I think, that doesn't get the credit that he deserves. The beating he put on Ray Tam. I mean, you go through this. There's a ton of guys here on this list that were big-time great fighters that he fought, or at least very good.
I think Ruben Olivares, too. Did he fight Ruben Olivares? Why am I thinking he did?
Yes, he fought Olivares, I think, like
later,
74, 75. 74.
I think it was 74, yeah, he fought Olivares.
He knocked him out in, mm-hmm, I think it was like the 13th round.
Something like that, yeah, and another heck of a fight. Yeah, he was fun to watch because he was a systematic fighter, the way I look at it. He did everything so textbook, and the way he would go to the body was just a thing of beauty. And then he was, again, what you said in the beginning when you introduced us, he's such a classy individual. What happened to him later, I don't know if I understand exactly what happened, but nobody probably will ever. But as a boxer and as a person, everything that he did in the ring was high class, kind of like Carlos Palomino, you know, always was in boxing, just total class all the way. And you said this a few days ago, I'm not going to take credit for this. You said that in a sense, I think you implied that he was underappreciated. And I agree. I don't think people talk about Alexis Arguello nearly as much as they should, because he was in our day and years ago. I mean, he was, you never missed him when he was fighting, and because he was so explosive, and then he could box. I mean, you're talking about just an all around great fighter, period.
Yeah. And he won titles at three divisions. He was almost the first man to win four when he lost to Aaron Pryor, which may have just been because of that damn bottle.
The one that was mixed.
Yeah, the one that was mixed. And, I mean, the sad thing here is, I mean, the fights I would have always wanted to see would have been Arguello, Sanchez, or Arguello and Durant. And I believe Arguello beat Sanchez. I believe he may have beaten Durant, too.
Boy, Salvador Sanchez is another guy that you can't imagine him losing, because he barely supposedly beat Nelson, so he almost lost. That would have been a heck of a fight. Sanchez was more a boxer, but he was a slugger too, and when he had to be, he could brawl like he did to Danny Little, Red Lopez, two fights. So that would have been a real, but Aguayo was better, I think. I agree with you. Duran, he certainly would have had the height and the reach. That one is, I don't know, 135 pounds. Duran was so tough to beat at 135, even though DeJesus did it. I don't know. That one would have been a toss-up fight, too. It would have been great. It's too bad it didn't happen, because those are fights you wish you could have seen, because what would have happened with these two guys? Totally opposites in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and if you remember his life, you also had the conflicts in his homeland.
Yes.
And I mean, he had to deal with that, and I think that started like late 70s, early 80s. And then, of course, as you alluded to, he died in July of 2009, apparently shooting himself through the heart in Managua. Yeah. The national police confirmed that death.
Yeah.
I really can't see a man like him giving up and killing himself.
Yeah, it's the same argument that people have about Gotti, you know, him committing suicide. With all the guts that was shown, you just have a hard time imagining if somebody like doing that, shoot yourself in the heart. I mean, I don't know. It's just things happen. People are more complicated than we realize sometimes. But I don't know. That was a shocker. And he lost a boatload. I think almost all his money when he was a president of Nicaragua, right? And he lost so much money trying to
protect. Well, he was the. I think he was the vice mayor.
Vice mayor of Nicaragua. Okay, so I know he lost a lot of money.
Which was actually. I mean, I think in 2008, they found that there was a little vote rigging going on, which is why he won. But there was a lot of dirty stuff going on in his homeland for the last 100 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you look at it, though, you just look at the names he beat. I mean, Castillo, Chacon, Lamone, Escalera twice. He did have trouble with slick boxers. Sure. I know. I think Villamar Fernandez that beat him, who was a slick boxer. But then again, Fernandez as a slick boxer, I think he also gave Roberto Duran a tough time too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And and especially as Alexis got older, slicker boxers just because he got slower, you know, and they just box circles around. And that's what I alluded to Billy Costello. That's what he did until he caught him. And he was more of a plotter as he got older. But when he was younger, if you go back and watch films when he was younger, he'd never be the fastest guy in the world, but he was faster then. And that was how he was able to catch some of those guys and stop them. But there really is no debate about Alexis Arguello. If anybody ever says anything about him, about not being great or whatever, they just don't know what they're talking about. Because
put it like this. I think he was one of the top 100 power punchers of all time. I think he was one of the top 100 body punchers of all time.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, he stopped so many guys. And there again, like we're talking about, in a way, moving up in weight. He moved up in weight and did his thing. He was one of those guys that I was lucky enough to see him, even though it didn't turn out well, second fight against our Aaron Pryor. And I probably told this story, but I think I wrote about it, the complete differences of their training routines, where Aaron Pryor, Alexis Arguello was first, and he came in no frills. He just came in. He looked like he was in his hotel robe. He came in, his hands were wrapped in his shadow box for a while and sparred like 10 rounds, and then he was gone. He was done in an hour, and then Aaron Pryor comes in to Donna Summer's song, She Works Hard for the Money, and he's got about 30 people behind him as he's walking
in. Screaming, what time is it?
Oh, my God.
You know, the thing I remember most about that fight, and number one, I think it was shown on a Friday night.
Yeah, too, I was there.
Which you don't see much anymore. A lot of them were during the week, but I remember watching it. Once again, it was on TV, which was like a regional network, and you could buy the fights like that for like 10 or 15 bucks. But I remember, the thing I most remember about that fight was watching Tony Danza jumping up and down every time our Alexis Arguello did anything positive. I mean, Tony Danza was shadow boxing in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Because it's hard not to cheer for Alexis Arguello.
It's impossible. Obviously, I'll be honest, I was pulling for him both fights. I wanted him to win. I didn't, after he got beat so brutally in the first fight and hit Aaron Pryor with everything with the kitchen sink and didn't stop him. I didn't think he had a chance, but he fought hard in the second fight. He was there.
No, the second fight was a great fight too. Yeah. Wasn't as good as the first, because the first Pryor Arguello fight, I think since I've been alive, fights I've seen live, that might have been the greatest one. It's up there for me with Duran Leonard one also.
Yeah, it was outside in Florida, right in Miami, and Arguello had all the crowd, pretty much most of the crowd pulling for him. So it was dramatic, brutal, exciting, back and forth. Controversial. It had everything. The second fight was more straight-laced, where Pryor eventually stopped him. I remember when he got knocked out.
Yeah, I think the second fight was in Caesar's Palace.
Yeah, that's where I was. That's where I saw him training.
The first one was Miami, correct? Yeah. The Orange Bowl.
Orange Bowl, that's right. Yeah.
And the walkout fight, I think, was Roberto Duran after Arguello Pryor won. I think he fought Jimmy Batten.
Yeah, well,
I think that's how you say
fighting
it.
Fighting those guys, and yeah.
Almost everybody left by the fourth round because it was one of those fights where Duran hadn't shown up yet.
Yeah,
so,
which happened.
I think Duran won a – yeah, Duran, I think, won a boring decision. But, I mean, that'll tell you how far Duran had fallen because of the no moss and then the loss to Wilfred Benitez. And it's the other thing I tell people because everybody's always, well, Sugar Ray Leonard ducked Aaron Pryor.
Please, well, myth.
Aaron Pryor, I mean, Sugar Ray Leonard was retired by the time that fight's even a possibility because people forget Aaron Pryor was at 135. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard is at 147. And I'm sorry, Aaron Pryor was an all-time great fighter, but he is not on the level. Sugar Ray Leonard would have knocked him out within five rounds, I believe, because Pryor would have came at him hard. And even with his bottle, Sugar Ray Leonard was one of the biggest punchers I ever saw at the welterweight division.
Yeah, and sure.
And people forget that. They think he was a pretty boy that ran and boxed. Ask Tommy Hearns and Roberto Duran and all those guys if he could punch or not.
Sugar Ray Leonard was, when he got you hurt, as Randy Shields told me years ago, he was meaner than you and any SOB you'd ever run. And he wanted to knock your head off. I mean, he was already feeling that way anyway, but he was the best finisher in boxing. Just check some of his... how what he did to Donnie Lalonde later in his career and the Hawk.
The Lalonde one's the one that stands out to me.
Man.
When I interviewed Lalonde like 6-7 years ago. He was actually winning the fight against Leonard.
He was.
I think on all three cards by a point.
Yeah.
And he said, it's the ninth round. I think, man, this dude don't even hit that hard. He said, the next thing you know, I'm waking up in the locker room and I've lost my belt.
Well, I mean, and it was dramatic like that. And you could see Sugar Ray Leonard was like, I mean, he was so determined. That, yeah, and that was later, and he was past his prime by that point. So it was the mid-80s. He lost.
Yeah, because other than I think that was 1987 or 88.
Yeah, he lost his prime. I think it was 88. Yeah, all those breaks he took, it catches up with you. I don't care how good you are, but yeah, he was Sugar Ray would have stopped Pryor. He'd have knocked him out. I have no doubt in my mind about that. No doubt.
And there are not many people that ever lived that could have beaten Sugar Ray Leonard.
Right. Right.
Love him or hate him, that's just the truth.
Yeah.
All right, John, anything else before we wrap it up?
Well, no, I'm just glad that boxing finally has a couple of really good fights. I know I'm more excited about some of the ones coming up. You don't care about Joshua and White. I kind of do.
I care just because I believe White might beat him. And I don't think White's any good, but I don't think Joshua's any good
either. We got two heavyweight fights in August, which is rare. We got Dubois and Usyk, and that ought to be good for three or four rounds, and then Usyk will probably start teeing off on Dubois and stopping.
I think it'll be a good fight until about the seventh or eighth round when Dubois is laying on the ground.
Yeah, something like that. So we've got
Usyk's gonna wear his ass out.
Yeah, he's just too smart. So we got some good stuff coming up. And of course this week is a dream for boxing fans with this fight tomorrow and then Crawford and Spence on Saturday.
It'll feel like a dream at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to write about it. I don't even know where I am at 5 o'clock in the morning. The dog will get
at least if you write about it right away, you'll get it out more than most. I may just write about it immediately after the fight and just put it up.
Well, that would be the way to get the most reads. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking about. I don't know if I have that ambition anymore, Mike. So we'll see.
You need a new Chicago Bears hat.
That is my, well, that's not a new one, but I have two of them. And this one, I've never worn this one on the show. So I thought you would be impressed by this one. So.
Yes. No? I'm very impressed by your Bears hat.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, hey. Maybe I'm losing a wild card game this year.
Really? Well,
I'm just kidding.
I have no expectations. So.
All right, John. All right, guys. We will be back.
Your Reds are doing good, Mike. I got to give it to you. Your Reds are doing really well. So they're proving that they're damn good. So there you go.
About time.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the preview for Crawford Spence Thursday morning?
Same time, same bat channel. Sure.
All right, so we will go live for that one. This is recorded. We will go live at noon on Thursday to preview Terrence Crawford versus Errol Spence, a fight I never thought would happen. Yeah. Well, I thought it would, but I just thought it would be like 3 years from now.
Yeah, when they were about 50 years old, yeah.
Make sure you guys check out BetMGM, which is the best place for betting on the fights this weekend. I would still go plus 225, take the monster to win by decision. Also,
listen to Mike.
Like, subscribe, click the bell notification for us on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio. We're on over 300 different platforms, video and audio. Go like our Facebook page. But for now, what's your dog's name again?
Humphrey.
For Humphrey, John Respani, I'm Mike Goodpasture. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.